Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 148. I'm your host, the Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host and nemesis, Beardy Kong himself, Pete Michaud.
Please won't you be my neighbor?
Sure, Pete, whatever you say. We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We have some new releases to discuss, we have a bunch of news to talk about, and then we also have this week's big topic, which ties into the fact there are now 1,000 games available in the Nintendo eShop. Our big topic is going to be the must-have indie titles for Nintendo Switch.
That's a lot of games.
It is a lot of games. And we have a lot to discuss, so we should jump right into it. And let's start by talking about one of the new releases, that being Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate.
Ooh.
Yes, this is the latest version of the popular dinosaur hunting series, for lack of a better description. It's basically an enhanced version of Monster Hunter Generations on 3DS, and you can even transfer your save data from that game using a special app.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, that's very interesting. You know, I was wondering how the heck they would even do that, but yeah, it's a real thing. I don't have any data to transfer myself, but you know, for people who play that game and probably put in hours and hours on the 3DS version, it's pretty neat that you can transfer it over to Switch.
Yeah, no kidding.
Now, I admit I have not picked up the full game. I've just been playing the demo a bit. Pete, what about you? Did you pick it up?
I've got as far as downloading the demo, Chris, but I haven't actually played it yet.
All right. Well, we'll have to do something about that soon. Well, let me tell you, so far I have been appreciating the variety in this game. There are no fewer than 15 weapon types, including a ridiculously huge sword, a slightly less ridiculously huge sword, dual swords, sword and shield, a lance, a hammer, a crossbow, a ridiculously huge axe that transforms into a ridiculously huge sword.
Right. Of course, you gotta have that.
And then apparently you can pick, like, being a kitty cat, which is supposed to be a support class, and you just run around as a kitty cat trying to hack up these gigantic monsters.
Please stop saying kitty cat.
It's got kitty cats, man. That's half the reason to play this game, is that Monster Hunter has playable kitty cats.
Aren't they called something like felines or something? I forget.
Yeah, they're called felines, spelled with a Y.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, they are in there. They offer you support if you're in there in solo play, and they're also there in other various roles, and yeah, now you can actually play as felines. So, yeah. This game is certainly for kitty cat lovers. In addition to all those weapon types, there are 6 different fighting styles. Guild, Striker, Aerial, Adept, Valor, and Alchemy. Although, honestly, I haven't really played enough to, you know, really figure out the nuances.
Yeah.
And even though this game is a demo, it's not there to, like, teach you how this stuff works. The differences are not readily apparent. Like, I know with the Aerial one, you can, like, launch into the air and jump on enemies' backs and attack them that way. How you do that, I couldn't begin to tell you.
Right. Like, I always found that series, and I'm sure that game is included, there's just not a lot of hand-holding.
Yeah, it is somewhat impenetrable. I mean, the last one I played, it does sort of ease you into it a little bit. I think that was Monster Hunter 4 on 3DS. But yeah, a lot of the times, you know, there is a lot to get through. And, you know, that's one of the reasons that I've never really gotten into this series before. The only one I've ever really super gotten into is Monster Hunter Stories, which is, of course, a completely different type of game.
A baby game for babies.
No, it's just a, you know, traditional, fairly traditional RPG. you know, certainly a different genre.
I'm only kidding.
You're a big jerk. With a big beard.
True.
Anyway, I certainly enjoyed running around the world of Monster Hunter Generations Ultimate. There are plenty of caves and cliff sides and plains and snowfields to explore. You know, there's even an underground river in the demo. You know, there's this crazy windswept precipice where the storm is going on. That place was really, really neat. And, you know, there are also minor enemies to interact with and kill, and, you know, there are items to collect. You know, and I'm not sure how all this is going to, you know, unfold in the final game, because there are 3 separate maps you would play through on the demo, depending on which of the 3 available monsters you want to hunt. Like, do you transfer to different maps depending on what your quest is? I don't know. But yeah, there were you know, an easy, a medium, and a hard monster to go after. When I fought the easy monster, I used the sword and shield, and I was able to take out that guy without too much trouble. For the medium monster, I tried playing as the feline, which, you know, that's the support class. It was not very effective, but, you know,
imagine.
I kept at it. you know, I basically fought the monster to a standstill until my 25-minute time limit ran out, and I was not able to defeat it.
That's so sad.
But then in the hard mode, I decide, well, you know, these are some pretty tough enemies. Let's be a little more cautious. Let's stay far away. Let's use a ranged weapon. So I got the heavy bow gun, and it didn't help at all. That was a really bad choice. I got completely mauled and wiped out, and the monster would just see me, and it would clobber me, and I died again and again and again. And, you know, I imagine if you're playing solo, you want to have, you know, probably something that's good for up-close damage. I imagine the bow gun is probably more effective if you're doing multiplayer play, and so right. That way you can have, you know, your up-close strikers laying down the damage and sort of distracting the monster, yeah, while you have the long-range characters and support characters lending their aid. So, you know, I would really like to be able to try all that stuff out sometime, but so far that has not happened. I've just been, you know, able to play it in the demo on my own, and, you know, while it is fun, it still sort of seems to have some of the things in previous Monster Hunter games that kind of kept me away. Mostly that being that the fighting is somewhat clunky, mm-hmm, and unresponsive. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep. There's definitely like a lot of timing based attacks.
Yes.
But they end up kind of just feeling kind of wonky.
Right. Like once you attack, you are totally committed to this. And, you know, especially if you have a big weapon like the crazy looking sword axe or the hammer, you are committed to these attacks. You are going, yeah, through that motion. Even if the monster like gets up and flies across the entire battlefield, you are going through with that attack.
Right.
And like, it's really hard to, you know, change direction and stop what you're doing when you're in the middle of these moves. So even with the sword and shield, which is supposed to be one of the more responsive ones, like I'm, right, doing an attack and the monster moves and it's really hard to turn around and fight him some more. It's like, no, that monster's the other way. Come on, turn around, turn around.
Yeah, meanwhile, come you're on, still you swiping.
Right, right. Yep. Yeah, and the nice thing, though, about the sword and shield is that at least you don't have to put away your weapon when you want to use recovery items. That was one of the things that was very helpful using that. So, you know, I imagine that if I do pick up the final game, that's probably the class I'll start with, because that is very convenient for newcomers like me.
I feel like we need to play online, Chris.
Well, I think we should. I was hoping we could have done that before we record this podcast. It didn't happen, but yeah, there's still time afterwards. We should totally do that.
We should. How was the graphics on this game?
The graphics were solid. It wasn't anything amazing. It didn't seem to really, you know, push the power of the Switch or anything.
Sure.
Obviously, way, way better than what you would have gotten on the 3DS. You know, it was perfectly adequate, but nothing mind-blowing.
Nothing you were like, wow, it looks so pretty.
Yeah, nothing I would say that about. I mean, it did look good. It looked decent, especially the monster models. But the textures in the environments were kind of meh. So overall, I'd say it was really, you know, nothing to write home about.
All right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's really hard to make a judgment just based on the demo. It's not screaming to me, oh, go out and buy this game. It feels a lot like the past ones, but I am intrigued. I would like to play more. I would like to play it in multiplayer, either online or local. And, of course, there is the promise of, you know, trying to go out and hunt down the Fated Four and this all-new Elder Dragon that are in the game. If I have the opportunity to do that, that would be great.
Very cool.
But at the very least, we should try to get in some online multiplayer, like you were saying. That'd be great for sure.
Yeah, now, can I attack you, or do I have to just attack the enemy?
I guess we'll have to find out.
Sweet. You can be my feline companion.
Well, I guess you'd be a feline pretty good about that, huh?
No, I feel awful now.
You're feline awful.
Nope. Pretty sure I just feel disgusted.
The other game that I have been playing on Nintendo Switch is Blade Strangers, the fighting game from Nicolas.
Oh, is that the one with Balki Bartokomis in it?
Sorry, the 80s called and they want their joke back.
Hey, now.
Yes, I do remember that show. No, this has nothing to do with it. This is a fun, gorgeous crossover fighting game, not featuring anybody from obscure 80s TV shows, but, you know, from some sort of obscure-ish games. I mean, it's got characters in there from Cave Story Plus, The Binding of Isaac, Code of Princess, and then we get obscure when we get to Umehara Kawase, which was released in the U.S. as Yumi's Odd Odyssey, and, you know, pretty much very few people have heard of, really.
Right.
But it was a bit of a long-running series over in Japan.
Cool.
Then on top of that, though, it has Shovel Knight and also Azure Striker Gunvolt, plus a couple of original characters, 14 playable characters in all.
Yeah, I just Googled it and got an image of Solange, and thinking about picking it up now.
Well, the character designs are very titillating.
Oh, boy.
Now, I have to say, before I start talking about the gameplay or any other aspect of it, I have to say, I just love the anime intro to this game. I love the intro. I love the theme song. I mean, it's sort of cheesy, but it has this super energetic, like, 90s feel to it that really got me excited to play. And I know that in the long run, it's sort of unimportant, but I love it. I love the anime intro, and I wish more games had stuff like that. I think it's fantastic.
Sweet. I want to check it out now.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's also very accessible. That's the other, you know, sort of hook about the game, aside from the crossover characters, is that it has these simple one-button special moves, kind of like in Smash Brothers. You know, back and the special move button does one thing, forward and the special move button does another thing, and so on. But it's different for each character. Not everybody has the exact same moves, but still you're not doing, you know, charge back for 2 seconds and forward or quarter circle motions or anything like that. So it becomes, you know, pretty simple. You don't have to worry about pulling off the move. It's more like figuring out, what am I supposed to do? It's easy to do it, and now I can get back into the fight. There's also a dedicated button called Unique Attack, and that's for like aerial counters, knockdowns, and other, you know, important tactical moves like that. And like I said, that's all just mapped to a single button, so, you know, it's very pick up and play in a lot of ways. Of course, there's also still plenty of room for complex combos. Using the characters properly really does seem to take skill. And, you know, overall, with the exception of not having to do, you know, these controller motions for the special moves, it does feel very old school in a very good way, like a classic Capcom fighting game.
Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played a ton of it so far. I've played through story mode with about 4 or 5 characters. I've done a little bit of the challenge modes. I played through survival mode on the easy setting. And I played through arcade mode once. And that's basically the same as story mode, only without the cutscenes. And if there was one thing I'd want to change about the game so far, it's that when you beat the last boss in story mode, you just get a game over. You don't even get the credits or anything.
What? That's really
Yeah, it's kind of lame. Like, that's such a little simple thing. I hope they just can add in a little patch. And be like, yeah, we'll just run some credits for you so you don't feel like a total loser after being the final boss in arcade mode.
Right. It's like when the outcome's the same as losing, that's no good.
Yeah, exactly. So sort of, you know, as you can tell, it does have a lot of modes to it. Aside from the stuff I've talked about, there's a training mode, there's a regular versus mode, there is online as well. I have not tried playing online, but, you know, that's in there with rankings and leaderboards and all that good stuff. Yeah, so far I'm really having a good time with it. It is fun. I, you know, don't think I'm close to, you know, mastering any characters or picking a main or anything like that. But I'm having a really good time just trying it out, playing through their various stories. I am familiar with most of the characters, so it's fun to see them brought to life in a brand new way. Obviously, Shovel Knight is going to be a fan favorite, and it's really cool to see him and see his stage in 3D and hear the remixed music from the original Shovel Knight appearing in this game, so that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, although he is sort of bulkier and heavier than I would expect. I mean, he seems like such a diminutive character in his own game, but he's like, you know, this big hulking, you know, looks like a big, you know, grappler type character in this game. He kind of moves sort of slower than you'd expect, but still, you know, it doesn't change the fact that it is fun to play as him. Not that I've done a lot with him yet. I still haven't even unlocked him for story mode.
Are you saying that Shovel Knight is basically the Zangief of Blade Strangers?
Almost. I wish he had a few more grapple moves. He does have an up-close throw move, but no spinning pile drivers or anything. But yeah, he's you know, big and hulking and powerful, so yeah, in that regard, maybe he is. Maybe he is.
Well,
but yeah, all the characters have their trademark moves. They also have their own character-specific backgrounds. And the whole game just looks fantastic. I love the visual style of the game. It has a very colorful anime aesthetic. And yeah, it's just come together really well, I would say, from my early playthroughs. You know, time will really tell if it's got the depth and longevity that I would want in a fighting game. But, you know, so far so good, I would say.
Cool. Yeah, I actually watched the animated intro while you were talking, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it a lot. So, since you haven't been playing that game, you haven't been playing Monster Hunter, what have you been playing recently?
Ah, well, I actually picked up Bad North recently.
Oh, okay. That is the Viking-themed strategy game, right?
Yeah. To put it the way they have it on their website, a minimalistic real-time tactics roguelite with Vikings.
And beards, lots of beards.
Well, you don't really see many beards. You don't see really much of anything. The characters are quite small, but it doesn't take away from the overall aesthetic and feel of the game.
All right. Well, I don't really know a whole lot about it, other than that it's Viking themed. So tell me, what's the gameplay like, and are you enjoying it?
Yeah, so the way it starts, you know, you really have not many options to choose from. You kind of just jump into the main game. And it's funny because it actually starts you on hard. You have the choice of normal or hard difficulty.
Okay.
You can also turn the tutorials off so you never have to watch the tutorial again. You don't even have to watch it the first time, but I suggest you do because it doesn't take very long. Anyways, essentially, you are a clan of some sort of folk that start off on an island.
Okay.
You can rotate the island, so you can kind of see this island from 360 degrees.
Okay.
And it's a real-time strategy in a sense that you are kind of looking at this island, and all of a sudden, before you know it, a boat starts showing up out of nowhere. And the boat has some fighters on it, and, you know, they're Vikings, apparently. Although they're not all Vikings. I think certain units have like sword and shield, and I think those are meant to be Vikings. But regardless, so you're looking at this island and bad people start to show up, and you control two different units, and you tell those units where to stand, and you can kind of move them around the island. And, you know, in the beginning, you just have these simple militia type guys that, you know, don't do much of anything besides just attack.
Okay.
And so you kind of want to, you know, make sure that you're protecting these houses that are on the island. And each island, from what I can tell, seems to be procedurally generated. I don't think it's necessarily the same game every time you play.
Yeah, I think I've heard that about the game. I do believe it does have procedurally generated elements. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so anyways, you know, as these, you know, Viking waves start to show up, you try to dispatch them, and it can actually look pretty cool. You know, it's very stylized. There's not a lot of hyper detail, or like I said, you can't really see the faces of these characters.
Yes.
But you get this sense of like a big melee when these guys land, and it just all of a sudden feels like this really, it almost reminds me of Game of Thrones. There's like this background music is like this, you know, horns and like very moody feeling of battle. Like you hear war drums in the background. You just kind of get this feeling that you're just, you know, you're doing pretty good in this first battle, but you know there's going to be harder battles. So
what kind of options are at your command as you're you know, battling back the enemy Vikings?
Yeah, so in the beginning, all you really have the ability to do is move your units around and strategize on where they stand so that they can't just run up to your buildings and start attacking.
Okay, so you're mostly in a defensive position then, huh?
Yeah, and I would say each round maybe max lasts 5 minutes, but that's even probably on the long end of the spectrum. Most maps are somewhere in like the 2 to 4 minute range.
Oh, okay.
So it's very quick, like, you know, easy to play. Anyways, as you proceed onto different levels, you get to kind of choose your path. There's a bunch of different islands, and each round you have to rest. And you basically lose the ability to go back to certain islands, but then you gain the ability to go to other islands. And you can kind of see that some islands contain specific treasures or specific other units. So you start off with basically the ability to control two units led by two different leaders. You can end up picking up a new leader as you keep exploring islands. And eventually you can have a total of 4 units led by 4 leaders. And then, not to mention, you also kind of gain coins as you successfully save houses from getting pillaged. You take these coins and you add them to your leaders, and then the leaders get to unlock things. So you can turn your troops into guys that are like pikemen, and they hold, you know, long poles. So they're very good at holding Vikings off because they've got much longer weapons. But they're not very good against archers, which is another class you can unlock.
Uh-huh.
And then you can also unlock mercenaries, and essentially they're just really good sword and shield fighters.
All right.
And they all kind of have their pros and cons. And then eventually you can even unlock skills that they can do. Like, you know, the mercenaries can jump off of a ledge and do like a plunge attack. And the archers can do like a sort of like a rain of arrows on one specific target.
Okay, that sounds cool.
Yeah. Anyways, so as you keep playing, different things show up. You know, I got to the last level I played before I died. There was like a boat showed up with 2 giants on it.
Mm.
And I really was not expecting it. And they were brutal. Like they just destroyed my units. The thing about it is that once you lose a unit, they're gone. So,
oh man, that permadeath, huh?
Yeah, the permadeath is real, and you can of course make it to another island to get another unit back, but it's like it's a very substantial thing when you lose one of your generals.
So pretty challenging, huh?
Yeah, so in general, the fact that it's called a roguelite, it is designed that you die. But, you know, I think there is an ending because when you actually die, it gives you sort of a quick stat update and it'll tell you like how far you completed. So I imagine that there is an ending because I've gotten to something like 40%. So I'm assuming that there is some sort of end in sight, but I'm not really sure what that means and what you accomplish when you get there.
Okay.
But the, like I said, the game is so quick and each level so, you know, kind of pick up and play bite size that it's very compelling to kind of keep playing. And you kind of want to like, as soon as you die, you just want to go back and play it again to like see how far you can get.
So do you keep anything from when you die? Is there any, you know, permanent stats or abilities or anything that carry over to your new game? Or is it just totally starting from scratch every time?
You get nothing. You totally start from scratch. The only thing you really get is like extra knowledge of what the game contains. Because when you start off, you don't really know what to expect. But, you know, now I know there's giants in the game. And now I know there's there's levels that are really hard where things show up in all directions. And then some of the islands, too, I should mention, they're like multi-tiered. So you really have to kind of strategize how you're going to place each unit. And, you know, like where are you going to put your archers? Sometimes there's not really a good place to park them. So you just kind of have to keep them separated by other units. But it does get a little frantic. I should mention that when you actually try to control your units and move them from place to place, you get to stop time. Now, it's not completely stopped. Things still happen. It just happens at a much slower pace. There's no limit on that. But once you select an option for this unit, so if I tell this unit to move over here, the minute I press the A button, it kicks me back into real time. And when there's a fight going on, it really doesn't stop the time much at all. It just kind of prolongs the inevitable.
I see. Well, knowing is half the battle.
Yes. And it is a great game. From what I've played so far, I really enjoy it. But you have to like those kind of like strategy-based games where, you know, really simple concept, but like you want to keep playing it because there's more and more tactics you kind of unearth. And, you know, I kind of want to go look online and see what other strategies people are using. So yeah, I feel like you kind of have to be into the genre, but I would totally recommend it to anyone who likes that kind of thing.
So tell me, honestly, how much of your enjoyment of the game is derived from the fact that it stars Vikings?
I'd say all of it.
Okay, 100%. That's quite a bit.
No, it does have a Viking aesthetic, but I wouldn't say that that's really a selling point. I think it really just kind of reminds me of like the big battles in like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, like you were saying.
Yeah, there's just something about it where, you know, it feels very intimidating that you have, you know, you only have this little speck of land and in come these boats that are full of people trying to kill you.
All right. Well, it does sound pretty epic.
Yeah. Check it out.
All right. I might do that. There is one other game I've been playing from the eShop, and that is Karo Blaster. And that one is a retro-style action platformer from Daisuke Ameya, a.k.a. Pixel, the creator of Cave Story.
Now, Karo means frog in Japanese, right?
I believe it does, and yes, you do play as a frog. You play as a frog with a gun. So the name Karo Blaster is very accurate, yes.
Now, I feel like I played this on my iPhone like years ago. Is this the same game?
Yes, Karo Blaster did come out on iPhone a few years ago, but this is the first time it is on a Nintendo platform, I believe.
That's good to hear. When I played it, I thought the controls on the iPhone game were good, but they weren't good enough to like sit down and play an entire game.
Yeah, for an action platformer of this nature, I'm pretty sure you'd want to play with traditional physical, you know, joypad and button controls.
Totally.
And, you know, even though this game is much newer than Cave Story, to me it really feels like a Cave Story prototype in a lot of ways. Like, you know, it's pretty much a pure action game, whereas Cave Story, you know, was very exploration-driven, had a lot of adventure elements, you know, it was very Metroid-like in a lot of ways. This is pretty much straightforward, but it has very similar settings and weapons and a visual style and even the music and the goofy sense of humor. So, yeah, if you played Cave Story, you'll see a lot of similar things here. But the gameplay pretty much just comes down to run and jump and shoot.
But that's a good thing, because Cave Story was a really good game.
Yes, Cave Story was a really good game. And one big difference between Cave Story and this is that in Cave Story, you would power up your weapons by collecting these little triangles, look like Dorito chips that were flying around. But you collect those, they'll power up your weapon. If you get hit, you lose those and your weapon power decreases. In this game, you purchase the upgrades and they are all permanent. So the more you play, the more money you get, the more upgrades you buy, the stronger you get. And, you know, so even if the level seems really hard at first, if you keep at it and, you know, buy these upgrades, then it will get much easier. And there are, you know, four distinct weapons you get as you play through the early levels. You conquer the bosses, you unlock new weapons by beating them. And so it feels a little bit like Mega Man in that regard, in that you know, you get these weapons from the bosses, but the weapons aren't really tied to the bosses, and it's not like the enemies really have specific weapon weaknesses or anything. It's just like more, you know, how the weapon attacks. You know, you want a weapon, you know, to hit this enemy that's off in the corner by using your ricocheting spread gun. Okay, that's good. You can use a flamethrower weapon that blocks projectiles. Okay, that's what you want to use for this situation. But it's not like, oh, this weapon will do, you know, way more damage for this type of enemy or anything like that. But still, it's fun to, you know, figure out what weapon is best for the job. It's fun to just blast away with these four different weapons in your arsenal. You know, on the other hand, the graphics aren't particularly sharp. You know, they feel more like, you know, Commodore 64 level than NES level. And they also didn't do a whole lot in the animation department. Like, it uses the same character animation for your main character walking or swimming or even climbing ladders. So, you know, that was clearly done on a budget. But the controls are solid, the action is good. And then, even after you beat the game, there's an unlockable hard mode. And it's basically a completely different game. Like, totally different levels, totally different layouts, you know, same bosses, same themes, but it's almost like having two games in one.
Yeah, funny.
Anyway, yeah, it's, you know, I'd say very good game. I'm not sure I would call it a great game. I wouldn't say it's on the level of Cave Story, but I certainly had an enjoyable time with it. I think it'll appeal to action game fans and definitely mostly to Cave Story fans. So, yeah, I'm liking this one.
Yeah, I almost feel like some of the lack of polish in a game like that is almost part of the charm it has, you know?
Oh, yeah, probably. I think they could have done more, but I'm sure it was intentional.
Yeah, it almost adds to, like, the indie-ness of it.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Cool. Well, I definitely want to pick this one up, I think.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool game for $10.
So if you had your choice of protagonist, would you typically choose a chicken or a frog?
Oh, huh. Well, that's a tricky question. I suppose everything else being equal, I would go with a chicken, but I certainly have nothing against playing as a frog in this game.
Okay, fair.
All right, let us move along from the game impressions and talk about a little bit of news. So we've got an exciting bit of news from the folks at Capcom. They've announced that Onimusha Warlords is coming to the Nintendo Switch, as well as other platforms, in January. This is a remake of the original Onimusha Warlords, which hit many years ago back on PlayStation 2. Pete, did you ever play Onimusha?
Never have, but I definitely remember reading about it.
Well, it is a pretty cool game. It's sort of a little bit like Resident Evil, but set in feudal Japan and starring a samurai, and Oda Nobunaga is the bad guy. And it's also, you know, way more action-oriented than a Resident Evil game. But yeah, it was, you know, pretty solid when it came out back in the day, but this version goes even beyond that. It adds HD graphics, it adds widescreen support, there is now an easy mode, and there is also apparently a new soundtrack to the game, which in my opinion is kind of unfortunate because the original soundtrack was fantastic, but I guess the original composer, or maybe not the composer, was involved in a scandal because it was like determined he was a fraud, wasn't really composing his own music, so...
Oh, no.
That is probably why it's being replaced. I mean, I wish they could have just been like, okay, here's who really composed it, and I'll put their name on the game. Like I said, it was really good, so that's kind of a shame, but whatever.
Whatever.
Anyway, I did enjoy Onimusha Warlords way back in the day. I don't think I ever owned it, but you know, I certainly played through it, and I think it is absolutely a welcome addition to the Switch.
Yeah, definitely, and especially Capcom, you know, kind of testing the waters and kind of, you know, giving more love to the Switch.
Yeah, they are, but, you know, not as much love as they're giving to other systems. Once again, there is no physical release on Switch in North America. Other platforms are getting a physical release. We're only getting a digital release.
I'll give you a physical release.
I'm not paying for that.
Well, we'll see. Maybe if it sells really well, it will.
Yeah, we'll see. But, you know, they didn't do it for Okami, they're not doing it for this. I don't know what they're thinking over there. Overall, though, I'm kind of just really surprised they are going back to Onimusha as an IP.
Yeah.
I mean, it has been untouched by Capcom for a while. And this was a franchise that was very closely connected to Inafune, even more so than Mega Man ever was. Like, this was Inafune's idea from the ground up, I believe. Whereas, you know, Mega Man, he sort of came on board as the thing was already starting. So because of that, and because of the way he left Capcom, I'm really surprised the series is still getting any recognition by them at all.
Hmm.
So that's one strike against it. And then I think the visuals in the original game were pre-rendered, if I recall correctly. And that's a lot harder to upgrade to HD than just polygons. So it'll be very interesting to see how that transition and improvement is done. So, you know, I'm happy that we're getting it, but also completely shocked.
Yeah, do you think you'll be picking this one up?
I'd say there's a very good chance, especially since it's only going to be $20.
Cool.
You?
I don't think so, but I'd like to know what your thoughts are.
Okay, well, we'll find out early next year.
Cool. Sounds good.
Also in the news, the folks at Yacht Club have revealed a new mode for Shovel Knight. It is called Shovel Knight Showdown. You've been keeping up with this?
Yeah, I have. I looked into this a little bit. What's the lowdown on the showdown?
Well, it is a four-player versus fighting game mode that is, you know, built, you know, using the existing Shovel Knight engine.
Yeah.
You know, we have Shovel Knight as a non-playable character in Smash Bros. We have him as a playable character in Blade Strangers, and now we have an entire Shovel Knight-themed fighting game with 16 different characters, including Shovel Knight himself, Shield Knight, the Enchantress, the Black Knight, and even the entire Order of No Quarter, and like some generic knight enemy.
Yeah, Shovel Knight's in everything all of a sudden.
yeah, he is. I mean, he's been making the rounds for the past few years, but it seems like, you know, now more than ever, he's getting into the fighting game scene. So yeah, it's going to be fighting action for four players. It's also going to be a single-player story mode. And this will be included for those who already have Shovel Knight Treasure Trove, or you can buy as a standalone game for only $10. There is not a release date on this guy yet. It'll be coming out sometime after the King of Cards expansion, which they say they're going to announce a release date for very, very soon. But yeah, so far we still don't have those specifics as we record this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty much everything they've done with Shovel Knight so far has been fantastic. And even though this is outside of the traditional action platformer wheelhouse, I have no reason to believe that it won't be another awesome Shovel Knight mode for this popular game.
Yeah, it makes me want to try to round up a couple players to play this at some point.
Yes, it is going to be local multiplayer online. There is not going to be any online, so you will have to round up a few friends if you want to give this mode a full go and take in the entire Shovel Knight Showdown experience.
Oh, dig in, I get it.
Indeed. You know, personally, I still don't have this game on Switch yet. I'm waiting for them to do a physical version, which I'm like convinced they're definitely going to do once all of the content is out. But I will absolutely be playing it in some form or another. I'll probably have to resort to firing up my Wii U and playing it on that in the meantime. But yeah, this does look like it's going to be pretty darn cool.
Yeah, it's funny. They keep announcing these things via Kickstarter. You know, I backed it back in the day, so it's just kind of funny
right,
that they keep, you know, sending out emails using that distribution list.
Well, it's a good way to keep people informed, that's for sure.
Totally.
And if you did, you know, fund the game during Kickstarter, again, it's, you know, free to you. So that's great.
Free to Wii U.
That too. Well, speaking of fighting games, the year's biggest fighting game, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, has been announced that it's going to be getting a special edition here in North America.
Yeah, it looks pretty awesome.
Does it? Does it now? I'm not so sure.
I mean, honestly, if I didn't already own a Pro Controller, I would 100% get this bundle.
Well, I mean, the thing is, that's all it is. It's the game, it's this special Smash Brothers branded Pro Controller, and then there's a Steelbook case for the game to go in. But, you know, as far as special editions go, it really doesn't seem quite special enough for me for $140. I mean, if I see something called a special edition, I expect, you know, an art book, a soundtrack, some sort of tchotchke in there, something like that. I mean, it's definitely a cool controller, and I might just consider picking up the controller standalone, which you can do for $75. But, you know, to be honest, I'd rather have something with the awesome game art on it than the Steelbook case myself.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a huge special edition guy, so I kind of like the perks of this one just because I think that they're kind of stuff that I would actually end up using.
I figured you were going to get this as a digital version anyway, since you were all in on the digital with Switch.
Yeah, I 100% am going to get the digital version. Plus, I already have a million GameCube controllers, and I have the multi-adapter, so I am probably going to get the digital version. But I do like what they're doing here.
All right, well, to each their own. I might, you know, consider picking up the other controller separately if I do decide to get a second pro controller in the house. But, you know, I feel a game like Smash Brothers, they could be doing so much more than this that, to me, it feels just a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess there's probably just so much stuff in the game itself that they didn't feel like they had anything else.
That's true. That's true. I mean, they could do like a special edition and make so much money off of that thing. They could just put almost anything in there and it would sell. I don't know why they're not doing it, but whatever.
I saw someone on Reddit post like a GameCube controller Joy-Con attachments for your Switch, which would actually be pretty sweet, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so either, but if they did, I would kind of like that too, I'll be honest.
Totally.
Speaking of Nintendo bundle deals, though, starting on September 28th, there is going to be a new 2DS XL bundle coming out featuring this purple and silver version of the new 2DS system, comes bundled with Mario Kart 7 pre-installed. Now, I already have Mario Kart 7, and I don't really need a new 2DS or anything, but I have to say, I am liking this purple and silver color palette for the system. What about you?
Yeah, I do like this one. It kind of reminds me of the GameCube.
Yeah, exactly. The GameCube or the old GBA.
Yeah, right.
It's got that whole, you know, purple thing going on.
Yeah, it definitely harkens back to a bygone era of Nintendo.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately for my wallet, I really can't justify buying a new 2DS because I do like the 3D so much in the 3DS. But, I mean, if there was anything to convince me, you know, this is getting pretty close. This is getting pretty close to that. Yeah.
Yeah, I still haven't played the new Nintendo 2DS XL. Have you?
I have. And I'm very impressed how, you know, amazingly thin that upper screen is. It seems, you know, amazingly light and portable. But again, it's not 3D. So,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of taken out, you know, one of the main features I like about the system. So that's the big drawback, of course. If you don't care about that, hey, you know, this is great. You can pick it up for $150 if a purple and silver and new 2DS with Mario Kart 7 floats your boat.
Sweet.
Of course, the other bit of big news this week was that there was a Nindy Showcase event, and there were a whole bunch of titles and new details given out.
That's right. UK got one a couple weeks ago, and now it's finally North America's version.
Yes. Yes, it is. And I think it would take, you know, probably a long time to go through everything that was in there. So I think we should just sort of pick our favorite highlights that were shown on this showcase and discuss some of that stuff. Don't you think?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. Well, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is that we got some release dates for some highly anticipated games. First and foremost, for me, is that Undertale is coming out on September 18th, less than a month away.
Yeah, this is one a lot of people have been waiting for, right?
I certainly have been, yeah. I mean, I actually bought a copy on PlayStation 4, but I just haven't had time to play it. So I'm like, well, let's just wait until it comes out on Switch. And now it's finally happening, only a few weeks off.
Cool.
There was also a release date for Dragon Marked for Death. That is a game coming out from Intercreates, and that hits on December 13th. That's also one I've been wondering about. And then, you know, this isn't new news. This has already been posted on Nintendo.com and on the eShop, but The Messenger, that ninja game, is actually going to be out in the eShop by the time this podcast hits. So, you know, that's what I've really been waiting for, and you know, by the time you hear this, it will be out and available to buy. So that is all great news.
Yeah, you and me both.
But in addition to those updates on those previously announced games, there were, like I said, plenty of new announcements here. So one of those that I'm excited about is Hyper Light Drifter Special Edition, which is also not very far off. It comes out on September 6th. But this was a critically acclaimed Zelda-style top-down action adventure. It has been on other platforms, and it was supposed to be on Wii U, but I believe it got canceled, so I think this is the first time it's on Nintendo systems, right?
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
But, yeah, I mean, I've heard some great things about it, so, you know, it's really cool news to see it is going to be arriving soon on Switch.
Yeah, really like the style of this game.
Yeah, it looks pretty darn cool. What stood out to you?
You know, I actually really thought, and this is so random, but I thought that Untitled Goose game looked really fun.
Oh, yeah, that's certainly one that looks very interesting to me as well. I mean, I kind of want to know more about it, but it certainly sounds bizarre enough to be entertaining. I mean, It's an open world game where you're playing as a goose and ruining everyone's day and causing chaos by stealing their food and their clothes. And I know in real life that geese are jerks. So I feel like this is a pretty accurate goose simulator. It sounds, yes, very, very interesting to me as well.
Yeah, you can just run up and like nab somebody's sandwich off the bench.
So it seems. Yeah, I'm still kind of waiting to hear more about it, but it does seem very intriguing.
Yeah.
Another one for me that I am interested in is Miniko's Night Market, which, you know, judging from what they showed, I can't really tell what kind of game it is, but it's cat themed and it involves finding resources and crafting items and playing mini games. And then you sell stuff at this night market. And, you know, beyond that, I don't really know what happens. I mean, is it sort of a Harvest Moon type of experience where there isn't really any action? It's just about, you know, the story and, you know, making, you know, your goods and stuff like that. At any rate, it's, you know, seems, again, very unusual and curious. And I am intrigued. I would like to know more about that one.
Yeah, I got a very, like, Animal Crossing vibe from that one. And in a good
way.
Yeah,
that would probably be fair to say. Yeah, Animal Crossing, Harvest Moon. Something that's, you know, relaxing and different like that. And, of course, lots of cats. Can't go wrong with lots of cats, right?
Yeah, I'm excited to see how that one turns out.
Yeah, it's supposed to be out early in 2019.
Cool. I thought Treasure Stack looked really good.
Ah, okay.
It's basically a puzzle game where you get to run around on the actual level, like almost like in Tetris. You have a little, somehow you're able to control the pieces from the bottom of the playing field, which is a mechanic I've never really seen in a puzzle game before.
It looks like you're using like a grappling hook to pull the treasure chests down and then match them up and, you know, complete your line or whatever.
Yeah, and it looked really simple and pretty straightforward, but it looked like a ton of fun to me.
For me, one that also stood out was Levelhead. That is, you know, not just a platformer, but a platformer where you get to make your own levels and then team up to three other players to either play the levels or create the levels together. And then, of course, you post them online. And, you know, it's not Mario Maker, but, you know, it's sort of like the next best thing. And it even offers cross-platform play with the PC and the mobile versions. It's also a single-player platformer campaign mode as well. But, of course, as Mario Maker has proven, there is a ton of fun to be had in being able to create your own platforming levels. So I could see this one being pretty darn huge.
Yeah, totally. It definitely fills that kind of niche in the market.
Yeah, yeah. There is like unlimited potential in a game like this.
Totally. I was just going to say the last one for me would be Into the Breach.
Yeah, that was the last one I wanted to bring up as well. And, you know, that game actually is out now, so we could actually go play it if we wanted to, but I have not picked it up yet.
No, me neither. But yeah, it looks like your classic tactics game, but it almost kind of looks like, I don't know, it's made by the guys that made FTL, so it kind of has some of that aesthetic going on. It's very sci-fi.
To me, it reminded me of like a Game Boy Advance game. It had, you know, really that sort of aesthetic going on. Not only did it look visually interesting, but, you know, the gameplay, which seems to be, you know, turn-based isometric strategy featuring, you know, mechs versus monsters, you know, that seems pretty darn cool as well.
Yeah, totally.
So do you think you're going to pick this one up?
I do. Not sure when, because I've got a lot to play, but...
yeah, me too. That's the biggest problem right now.
But
especially with the Messenger coming out right now.
Yeah, no kidding. For $15, I believe it was, and available immediately, yeah, I'm definitely keeping my eye on this one.
Okay. All right, cool. Well, I'll be looking forward to hearing what you think of it then.
You could almost say I'd be laser-focused.
Uh-huh. I'll bet. Just a couple more bits of indie news. You know, this one was not on the Nindie Showcase, but the creators of Chasm have revealed that that game is coming to Switch later this year.
Huh?
Have you been keeping up on that one?
I haven't. Tell me about it.
It is a procedurally generated Metroid-style nonlinear action-adventure. You know, I covered it when it was coming out on other platforms, specifically on Steam and Mac. So, you know, it looked really, really interesting then, and I was kind of hoping it would be coming out on Switch, and lo and behold, indeed it is. So that one seems like it should be really, really cool.
Looks great. I'm really interested to see how this game comes to fruition.
Yeah, I mean, I have gotten to play a demo, but that was a couple of years ago, and I'm sure it has only gotten better since then. So, yeah, I am really looking forward to that one. It should be a blast.
Cool.
And then, you know, I'm not really sure where to couch this one. It can't be an indie game because, you know, Sega is involved, but, you know, Streets of Rage 4 got announced.
Yeah, that's crazy, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's no platform, so we don't know for sure it's actually coming to Nintendo Switch, but I am definitely crossing my fingers that it is. It's being developed by Lizard Cube and .emu and also Guard Crush Games, and a lot of those development teams are responsible for the excellent Wonder Boy The Dragon's Trap. So my hopes for it are pretty high. I love the Streets of Rage series. I love beat-em-ups. And even though there are, like, no details on this thing, you know, we don't know how many characters or how many players or if composer Yuzo Koshiro is involved, but I am crossing my fingers and hope it comes to Switch and hope it is fantastic.
What a random reveal, huh?
Yeah, I mean, who would have expected that more than 20 years after the last Streets of Rage game, there's going to be a Streets of Rage 4? I was not expecting that one. That one kind of came out of nowhere, I admit.
Were you dancing in the streets?
Yes, you could say that I was, sure.
Amazing.
All right, then. That takes care of our news for this week, so I guess it's probably time for us to take an intermission, huh?
Hey, wait a second there.
Oh?
I think first it might be time to hassle the hop.
Oh, are we doing that again? Okay.
Well, yeah, this is becoming a thing now.
All right. Okay. What do you got for me this week? Let's do it.
All right. Mr. Hoffman, what is your biggest pet peeve in gaming?
You mean aside from having my Final Fantasy VI Advance save file erased? This is actually a pretty tough topic for me, but I think I'm going to go with unskippable cutscenes that occur just before a boss fight. Now, for the most part, I'm okay with unskippable cutscenes. It doesn't really bug me that much. But when it's right before a hard boss fight, and there's a good chance you're going to get your butt kicked, and then you're going to have to repeat it, and you're going to have to sit through this cutscene every single time, then it really gets me. That really chaps my hide.
Yeah, I can agree with that one. I feel like everyone has experienced that at some point.
So that is definitely one. I'll give you two more bonus pet peeves. Oh. They're kind of game-specific, though.
Right.
One, Medusa heads.
From Castlevania?
You know the ones. The ones that go in that parabolic pattern that'll like always get you no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, for some reason.
And pressing down on the control pad and accidentally falling through the floor to your death.
Oh, yeah, that'll get you.
And if you've played the game where that happens in, you absolutely know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that shouldn't even be allowed, really.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Although I have to say, I think that's even happened to me a couple of times, like in Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Where I thought I was on a solid platform and I pressed down to crouch and it's like, oops, I just fell to my death.
Yeah, oh. Especially if you're playing like 8-player and you're not really sure which character's yours.
Yeah, 8-player don't know what's happening anyway. So there you go. I'm not sure if those all qualify as pet peeves, but there are three things that certainly get my goat, so to speak.
Those are pretty good. Nice work there, Hop.
All right. Well, with that out of the way, then, we will definitely take our intermission, and then when we come back, we'll discuss this week's big topic, which is Switch Indie Must-Haves.
Your soul, reach your fire.
All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the must-have indie games on Nintendo Switch. As we mentioned earlier on the show, there are now approximately 1,000 games available for Switch in the eShop. Yeah, it's very impressive, and obviously you have to attribute a lot of that massive library to the indie developers out there.
Yeah, or do you call them nindies?
Well, Nintendo certainly does.
They really do.
Yeah, they've been a big part of the Switch story, and with so many games out there, and without a great search function in the eShop, it's kind of really hard to wade through this and figure out, which is the good stuff, which stuff you should play. And so that is kind of the big topic for this week. We are going to try to at least talk about some of our favorites. I mean, it's obvious we can't talk about everything, we can't play everything, but we will do our best to point out some of the most notable titles that are out there in the eShop.
Indeed.
And, this is something that I loved to do back when I was at Nintendo Power. At one time, I was all about, let's talk about these obscure portable games that, people might not really pay attention to on the Game Boy Color or the Game Boy Advance. And then once digital downloads became an important thing, I was like, okay, let's try to focus on some of these lesser-known digital download titles and bring some attention to these games that might not get bought otherwise. But now, now that I'm not part of a big organization like that, it's really hard to keep track of everything. If I were to buy and play everything like I did back in the NP days, I would be very, very broke. I mean, I already am very broke. I'd be even way more broke than I am now.
Yeah, you and me both.
So obviously, this is not going to be all-encompassing, but we will do what we can to talk about some of these must-have indie games on the Switch.
Yeah, none of the grumble stuff, but...
Indeed.
Only the good one.
Yes, absolutely. So let's start out with a couple of the really obvious ones to get those out of the way. First of all, this is a game we've already been talking about a little bit on the show so far, and that is Shovel Knight Treasure Trove. Obviously, it is an indie darling, and with good reason. It has fantastic action, fantastic platforming, amazing level design, and with each add-on expansion, it just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, you really can't say enough good things about Shovel Knight. It's just a really good platformer that looks like it's, fell out of the sky from the 8-bit or 16-bit era.
Yeah, I mean, it really does the retro thing great, and everything about the game is pretty much spectacular. I admit, I know I said earlier, I actually don't own this one myself on Switch because I'm holding out for that physical version, but believe me, as soon as a physical version is announced, I will be all over that. Until then, I'm playing it on Wii U, but it's obviously a must-have.
Yeah, I think it's fair that you own it on Wii U. It's the same game on both systems, but...
It is.
But it is fantastic, and if you've somehow avoided it, just pick it up. You won't...
Yeah. Do something to correct that right away.
Yeah.
In the same vein, you should also definitely obtain Shantae Half Genie Hero.
Now I'm guilty of not playing this one.
Yeah, that's a crying shame, really. Because, this is a long-running series. It's been continuously updated with different modes and new content. The main game has these cool transformation mechanics. And, of course, just, the standard gameplay of whipping bad guys with your hair until they explode is pretty darn fun. But it's got great music, it's got great graphics, and going back to earlier levels to uncover hidden secrets with your new abilities is also really, really compelling. So yeah, this is just another great one.
And a memorable boss name, right?
Oh, it's your favorite. Just go ahead and say it.
Risky Boots?
That's right, Risky Boots. Yes. And of course, the Ultimate Edition is out there that includes all of the DLC, all in one package, so that's the version you probably want to get if you want to get in on this one. Yeah, don't miss out on Shantae.
I've got to finally play that game.
Yes, you do.
All right, the next one on the list is Axiom Verge.
Yes, yep.
Have you played this one, Chris?
Oh, absolutely. I played through it on Wii U, and then I played through it again on Switch. And again, another indie darling, another Metroid-style game. But yeah, it's really, really fantastic. Large arsenal of weapons, cool play mechanics like a grappling hook, an innovative glitch gun that lets you do things that you've never done in a game of this type.
Yeah.
You can even, warp through walls. But yes, I mean, this is definitely one of the best Metroid homage games in recent years. It is absolutely 100% worth getting.
Yeah, I'm only about an hour or so into it, but I was really impressed with how a lot of the weapons are nothing like what you'd expect to get in a game like this.
Yeah, it has a pretty big collection of weapons, you know, once you play through the whole game. But yeah, a lot of them are very innovative and different, and that is certainly part of the appeal of the game. Great story, too.
Yeah, definitely. And what about Celeste? Have you played that?
I have indeed. It's a lot of fun. You know, another brilliant title, excellent platforming. It's all based around this precise wall jumping and climbing and, you know, trying to get to the top of this mountain. It's pretty tough at times, but it's got some really great play mechanics, all based around the jumping and the climbing. And again, that's one that is not to be missed.
Yeah, it's got a jumping mechanic I've never really seen in a game before. And I thought that the storyline is really compelling. All around, great game, totally worth picking up.
Yes, very much so. Another one that you would definitely have to get would be Hollow Knight, I think. Deep, atmospheric, very challenging, and lots of Metroid-style goodness.
Yeah, Hollow Knight's amazing. I picked it up. I'm not disappointed at all. It is, Metroid style to a T. The art style isn't 16-bit. It's more like, you know, sort of flash animated. Mm-hmm. But it actually looks great, and it really grew on me. Very, like, Tim Burton-esque.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I will warn, it is very difficult. The later levels
that's what I've heard.
Can be quite punishing, but still totally worth playing.
Yeah, I'm not very far into this one myself. I'm going to play like an Albaran or something. But yes, it did seem worthy of all the attention so far. And speaking of Metroid-style games, you know, this is one I just talked about last week. But Iconoclasts, you know, really caught me by surprise. It was not on my radar at all. A friend convinced me to check it out. He just kept bugging me. I'm like, okay, I finally did. And I'm like, wow, this game is great. I love the colorful, bright visual style. I love the story. I love the fun puzzle aspect that's brought to the game through your wrench abilities. And I am looking forward to, you know, going further into this world, getting other characters, getting other weapons, getting other abilities. So far, it is amazing.
Cool. Yeah, I want to pick that one up.
Yeah, you should. Don't wait on it. Go out, grab it, check it out. Moving along then, another game we just talked about last week is Dead Cells, the procedurally generated action game that's super tough as nails, but also has very, very rewarding gameplay, loads of weapons, loads of abilities, and you actually do get to keep some of your upgrades when you die so that, you know, you can slowly grow stronger and actually hopefully make your way to the end eventually.
This game has a ton of buzz, and I feel like it's warranted from everything I've seen and read about it. I am waiting to pick this one up, but definitely interested.
Yeah, I mean, it was very, very good from what I played. I mean, again, not necessarily for everyone because it is so challenging, but, overcome that challenge and you will be very, very happy that you picked this game up.
Yeah, a little steep at $25, but, you know, you can't fault them for trying.
Yeah, I mean, I know last week we were talking about, you know, maybe we should wait for a sale, maybe we should wait for a sale. You probably shouldn't wait for a sale. You should probably just go ahead and get this one, you know, unless you're buying another 22 games all at the same time or something. Yeah, it's worth it.
Nice. One that I have talked about a few times on this show, and I can't talk enough about, is Rocket League.
Yes, of course. I mean, that game is so big and so popular, it seems like it, you know, can we even call that an indie game anymore? Well, yes, we can.
I know.
It's amazing. I mean, it's like, you know, surpassed anything that anybody could have imagined. I mean, it feels like it's up there as big and popular as any first party game there is.
Yeah, it's true. And if you haven't played it, it's a 3-on-3 car combat game where you're basically trying to knock a soccer ball into a giant hole, and it sounds ridiculous, and it
is car soccer,
but and like you almost cannot sell it by explaining it, but you just got to believe it's fun, and I promise you, you'll have a good time.
That's what I hear.
And you won't be able to stop playing it.
Another one that is a Switch indie must-have is Golf Story. I call it a must-have, but I actually don't have it yet because, you know, when it first came out, I don't know, I just didn't have the funds. And now I am holding out for the physical version from Limited Run Games. But, Pete, I know you picked it up, and I know you love it. I've heard, you know, lots of other people that love it. Please refresh my memory as to why this one is so great.
You know, it's really just an RPG where golfing is the center focus. And, you know, every single area you go to, you talk to people, it's very goofy. It's got like kind of an earthbound vibe to it. and you end up playing a lot of golf, but it's all done.
It's fun golf. It's not like stodgy golf like you think about when you see, you know, PGA or something like that. It's like golf made fun, golf made wacky, golf made silly. And I think that's, you know, what really has me, you know, interested in this game. It makes me really want to pick it up and finally play it.
Totally. It feels like a collection of golf mini games that, you know, there's no real, like, you know, enemies that you fight or anything. You're just trying to beat people in golf and make crazy trick shots and stuff like that. And it's just, the whole thing has just got a lot of charm and it's very fun.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
One I picked up a while back was SteamWorld Dig 2.
Ah, yes. Yes. You can't go wrong with that one.
Yeah, and again, you know, I hate to say Metroid style, but sure enough, it is.
There are a lot of Metroid style games in the eShop, but there are also a lot of very good ones, so it's not surprising that that keeps coming up as a term.
Yeah, this one is very good. I actually beat this game. It was compelling enough to, like, sit down and play it all the way through. I think, you know, start to finish, it was maybe about 10 hours with no real, like, going through for all the extras. That being said, all the power-ups are rewarding, and the way the pace of the game works is really easy to pick up and play. Anyways, it's just a fun game, and the concept is very simple, and the characters are very unique and interesting.
All right. Yep, definitely seems worthwhile to me. As does Stardew Valley, you know, which is basically a modern classic that, you know, to be honest, really isn't that much different from Harvest Moon in the fact that you're growing crops and raising animals. But you know, it still has a very, very distinct, unique charm, and it adds a combat element. You know, you explore these, you know, level after level of caves, and just has, you know, some quirky story elements as well that kind of set it apart. You know, it's weird because a part of me wants to say, you know, this game might actually be overrated, but that doesn't mean that it's not still great. So absolutely, you know, check this one out, believe the hype, go and invest in Stardew Valley, and, you know, take on some bizarre and relaxing farming fun.
The main reason I've stayed away from that one is because I feel like that's all people do once they buy it. They just play Stardew Valley.
That is definitely a danger. You can watch out for that. It's true. It's true.
Well, this next one is definitely not a Metroid-style game. It's
no, it's not.
It's a point-and-click adventure, like the old-school ones you'd expect, like Monkey Island and stuff like that. This one's called Thimbleweed Park.
Yes, yes, that was a great one. It's actually made by one of the creators of some of those classic LucasArts point-and-click games. So coming from that pedigree, it's not surprising that it's such a great game. You know, lots of puzzles to solve, multiple characters to play as, and, you know, a lot of interesting mysteries to unravel as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's certainly a good one if you are into point-and-click adventure titles.
Yeah, I think X-Files meets point-and-click adventure.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it, except with a very comedic twist. It's not exactly a serious endeavor like X-Files. It's definitely on the quirky and humorous side.
Totally, like good old-school point-and-click adventures.
Yes. And speaking of humorous, quirky point-and-click games, I would be remiss to not mention West of Loathing, which is not only a point-and-click adventure game, but it's also mixed with turn-based RPG elements and a pretty entertaining minimalist visual style. It has you know, black and white graphics and stick figure characters. Don't let that turn you away, though. If you like RPGs, if you like point-and-click stuff, it can be a really fun game. I've told a lot of my friends about it, and they've all gotten into it, and I've been very pleased with how many people I've been able to get into this title.
Yeah, super minimalist.
Have you played this one, Pete?
I have not, but I remember you reviewing it, and it looks funny.
You definitely should. I know you like, you know, point-and-click type of games, so you should totally make the effort to check this one out.
All right, fair enough. This next one is a game that is near and dear to me, and that is Kingdom New Lands.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to admit I picked it up on Xbox originally, ended up buying it for Switch because I loved it so much. Essentially, it's a side-scrolling real-time strategy where you get attacked from both sides of your castle, and you're the protagonist king on a horse, or queen as it were, and you ride back and forth doling out money to build up your resources and try to survive and make it off the island.
Okay.
And it kind of keeps going and going and going, but there's something really fun about it, and if you like games of that nature, it does it really well.
Cool. What else you got?
Another game that I really enjoyed on my Switch is Iron Cast.
Well, I don't even think I know about that one.
Yeah, it came out super early on in the life cycle, and it was, I believe it was originally an iOS game, but it's kind of a puzzle game meets mech attack game.
Weird.
In like a steampunk theme setting. And so you basically play a normal puzzle style game while you build up your resources to fire on an enemy mech. It's definitely difficult, and there's just a ton going on. Like, you really have to pay attention to a lot of different things, but if you like those style of games where you're, you know, it's kind of resource management by way of playing a puzzle game, it's totally up your alley.
All right. Sounds very, very different. Very interesting.
Yeah, worth a look.
Well, as for me, another one that I would consider a must-have would be The Mummy Demastered, which... Again, it's another Metroid-style title, but this time set in the universal, you know, mummy universe. You get a great set of weapons and abilities as you progress through the game. It has some excellent 16-bit visuals, and I really, really liked this game when it came out, but supposedly there has been an update since then that makes it even better and more refined and gives it a smoother difficulty curve. And while I haven't had the time to go back and play through it since those adjustments were made, all I can imagine is that if it was, you know, that good before and it's even better now, this feels like, you know, you've got to go and pick this one up. It's another one from WayForward, the same team responsible for Shantae. So, yeah, I would definitely say you got to get this one.
Yeah, I picked that one up last holiday, played it for a little bit, and then never picked it up again. I did like it. I just, you know, a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, well, you should definitely get back to it.
Definitely.
But speaking of retro-style horror-based games, another one you've got to get is Bloodstained: Curse of the Moon, which is basically, you know, like a modern take on classic 8-bit Castlevania. Konami's not doing it, so instead, Iga and the folks Integrates have stepped up and made this new update to the formula.
I gotta say, if this game was branded Castlevania, I wouldn't know any different. It is through and
yeah,
through
totally.
A Castlevania game.
Yeah, I mean, there are some subtle differences, but for all intensive purposes, it's basically old school Castlevania. And so if you like that stuff, you cannot miss out on this one.
Yeah, and I recently beat this game, and I'm very proud of it, because it does have pretty good difficulty on it, but it's not too much. I feel like it's perfect.
Yeah, I have been enjoying it so far. I haven't actually finished it yet myself, but I really intend to go back, because it is absolutely phenomenal so far. Another game that I think you got to get that is, you know, heavily retro-influenced is Zeo Drifter.
Ah, yeah.
It's another Metroid-like one. Yes, it is. This one, in some ways, might be the most Metroid-like of all. And I keep referring to this one as, you know, Metroid Lite.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, like, boils Metroid down to its barest essentials. You know, you explore these lonely planets while gaining new abilities and blasting aliens. And it's just a ton of fun.
Yeah, it really does. It kind of takes exactly what the Metroid recipe is, and it just refines it to the point where this is like exactly what a Metroid game is.
Just boiled down to its barest essentials.
Yeah, and it maybe has a tiny bit of cave story in it too, but yeah, it's just a fantastic game all around.
Yeah, I really like the way that you can allocate the power-ups to various aspects of your weapon. And while it's not a particularly long game, I would say is, you know, just the right length. It is short, but very sweet. Totally worth picking up for, you know, $10 or whatever it costs.
Totally.
Definitely recommend.
And once it kind of gets you, its hooks into you, you want to keep playing it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can easily just sit there and blast through it in one sitting because it is that, you know, compelling.
Yep. Another game on this list is Polybridge.
Okay. Yeah, I actually haven't played that one, but what do you like so much about that one?
I'd be hard-pressed to compare it to anything. I mean, essentially, it's a bridge-building puzzle game.
Right.
It's just all sorts of charm, and I don't know. I kind of fell in love with it, and I think other people would too.
Very physics-based, right?
It is. It's very World of Goo-ish, but it is even more strict when it comes to physics and resource building.
Well, it sounds fun, but challenging.
It is.
Okay.
Next one on my list is Thumper, which came out very early on in the console's life cycle.
Yeah, I barely remember that one.
And it's essentially described as a rhythm violence game.
That's right. I don't think I ever found out what that meant.
I think in like one of the eShop descriptions or in the trailer, it says something like it feels like a fever dream. I gotta say, it has that feeling. You play it It's very creepy. There's a lot of atmospheric music, and it's essentially this rhythm game where you have to tap to the rhythm, and very severe consequences when you don't, but totally worth playing.
Dare I ask what happens if you mess up? Make it sound like someone's going to jump out of the TV and stab you.
No, but it feels like that could happen. That never happens, at least as far as much as I've played, but it doesn't. That never happens.
Okay, well, that's good to know, I guess. Well, a personal favorite of mine is Blaster Master Zero. This is also one that came out, very early in the system's life cycle. It's an excellent update to the NES Classic. It has, pretty much all the same types of content that game did, meaning it has side view action adventure vehicle exploration sequences, as well as top down on foot segments where you're playing as the driver. And even though it was an early game, it is still worth playing now, especially with all of the extra character DLC that's come out. That gives you plenty of reason to go back and play this one, even if you have dabbled in it before.
That's right. It's very true to the original formula, so I like this one as well.
I mean, early on in the game, it seems like it's an exact remake, but the more you play, the more you realize that's not the case. But, regardless, it's a great game any way you look at it.
Any way you slice it.
And then the last one that I wanted to mention specifically was Fox and Forests, which is a really solid 16-bit style action platformer. I really like the season-changing gameplay mechanic. It adds a cool puzzle element. Plus, you have upgradable abilities. It has, variable difficulties you can choose from. And it just perfectly nails the 16-bit aesthetic. I mean, it's a little bit rough around the edges, but still totally recommended and worth every penny.
Rough. Was that a canine joke?
Well, you play as a fox, and so no, it wasn't. Sorry to say.
It's in the same family, no?
I don't know. I'm not a foxologist. Jeez. I guess in addition to those, I kind of want to give a shout out to pretty much everything that Nicholas has published. I mean, technically, those aren't indies since Nicholas is their publisher, but like Cave Story, Tiny Barbarian, Binding of Isaac, The End Is Nigh, they were all developed as indie games at one point before Nicholas took them under their wing. Definitely all those are worth adding to your collection as well.
Yeah, totally. Also, even though it's not really technically indie, I would recommend Snipperclips to anyone that is...
It is absolutely not indie, given that it's published by Nintendo, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, but I would still say it's a must-have if you want to play a co-op game on your Switch.
Well, in addition to all of these games that we've played and we have recommended, we put out the call to our listeners via Twitter, and they have a bunch of suggestions as well. Certainly, we appreciate everyone chiming in and giving your suggestions. It's impossible for us to play everything, so we're glad to find some other titles out there that we have not necessarily had a chance to experience ourselves. So let's run through that list before we wrap things up here.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
We've got Battle Chef Brigade, which is a cooking-themed action game combined with a color-matching puzzler. Also suggested, Cosmic Star Heroine, the sci-fi RPG.
Ooh.
The Adventure Pals, which is a platform action game, which I never really gave the time of day since it looks like a total Adventure Time knockoff. But if it's good, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, totally.
And then Bomb Slinger, which is basically a Wild West take on Bomberman. If you like explosions and you like facial hair, you will probably like this game.
I'm into those.
Demo is a fantasy rhythm game I've never even heard of until one of our listeners suggested it. And then Flinthook, which I certainly have heard of and I have been wanting to play. It's a grappling-based action platformer that looks amazing. I just haven't had a chance to check this one out.
Yeah, I feel like a bad person for not having played that yet.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, somehow it just slipped through the cracks. That's one of the little problems with the eShop is that, if it's under $20, then it's like, okay, this can be an impulse buy, but so many of them are $20 or more these days that it's like, oh, I don't have enough on my account right now. I can't buy it. And then it gets, put off and it's sort of, I might miss it or not play it for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But moving on though, another recommendation is Dandara, which is a Metroid style action adventure with these crazy gravity defying wall sticking play mechanics. It looks pretty darn fantastic, but I haven't had a chance to check that one out, sadly.
I don't think I've even heard of that.
I swear it was on a Nindies event or something, but it just sort of came and went without any more follow-up after that. Hopefully it's as good as it looks. Then Blossom Tales, The Sleeping King, which is a top-down Zelda-style game that looks pretty darn good.
Yeah, that one's supposed to be amazing.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Now, here's one that I've like never heard anything about previously. That is Astro Bears Party. You know, judging from the name, that feels like something I would never play, but apparently it's, you know, really good. It's a multiplayer versus action game, and it's currently on sale for only 99 cents through September 13th. So if you are thinking, well, maybe that's worth checking out, you know, there's never been a better time to investigate this one.
I've definitely stumbled upon that in the eShop and was very confused.
Yeah, it seems to be more about running around spheres than it does to be about bears. But yeah, supposedly it's a good one. Also on the list of recommendations are Oxenfree, a 2D supernatural thriller, Runner 3, which of course I have played on other platforms. You know, it's a super hard, quirky auto-running platformer that's a spin-off of the BitTrip series.
Yeah, the Runner series is great.
Also, MuSyncs, a hardcore rhythm game. I saw this one at E3, and my head almost exploded just looking at people playing it. It looks way too hardcore for me, but if you're into rhythm games, it seems like it could be pretty great. Kamiko, a top-down action adventure title. You know, how can we forget Yooka-Laylee? We forgot Yooka-Laylee. Yeah, obviously the spiritual successor to Banjo-Kazooie, you know, 3D platforming in all its, you know, 64-bit style glory. Slime Son, which is supposedly a very intense platformer where you'll probably die over and over and over again. Moon Hunters, which is another one I totally didn't know about, but is apparently a very good multiplayer action RPG. And then Enter the Gungeon, which, again, that feels like one I totally should have played but just haven't. It's a dungeon-crawling shooter that I know has been on lots of other platforms and is pretty darn critically acclaimed.
Yeah, I'm impressed with our listeners. This is a pretty good comprehensive list of games to play.
Yeah, there's lots of good stuff. 1,000 games overall. If we can just, you know, narrow it down to this list, that's getting somewhere. That's getting somewhere. Someone else also suggested Snake Pass. And, you know, personally, I could not stand that game. It drove me crazy, but I did want to make mention of it since at least one of our listeners really likes that one. I just found it too frustrating after the first few levels.
You know, that's another one that I bought that I just haven't played yet.
Ah, yeah, I bought that one right away, and I was hoping that after a few levels it would click with me. That didn't happen, and instead I just wanted to toss my Switch across the room. It just got so frustrating for me. To each their own, as they say.
Would you say that's another pet peeve?
No, Pete. I have never considered having a snake as a pet. All right. I think that takes care of this week's big topic. That is a whole lot of games to consider, but hopefully we've given some people some good ideas.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the thing is, there's just a lot of games out there. There's a lot of good games out there. So just, you know, pay attention.
What?
And stay in school and eat your vitamins.
Drink your milk.
Drink your milk.
Yeah, we'll continue to cover as much as we can here on the podcast, but you know, with 20 to 30 new games coming out every week, it's impossible to cover them all, but certainly I hope this helps. And, you know, that's the thing. This is not going to stop anytime soon. There are, you know, more new great games coming every week. Out of all the problems Switch could have, this is probably the best one.
Yeah, no kidding.
And with that said, I guess it's time to wrap up this episode of the podcast.
I think you might be forgetting something.
Am I?
I can't think of what it would be, though.
Oh, that's right. That would be the dramatic reading.
Ah.
And that ties in to a lot of stuff we've been talking about this week. It does involve an indie game from the eShop. In fact, is the eShop description of the aforementioned Caro Blaster. A frog has the adventure of a lifetime in this lovely stage-based action game. You play a bipedal frog employed by the mysterious startup company, Cat and Frog Inc. Fend off enemies seeking to stop you and overcome the challenging landscape as you head toward your destination. When you start the game, you'll likely be surprised by your skimpy amount of life and your crappy weapon. And when the frog runs out of life, he enters the hospital and has to restart from the beginning of the stage. But you can keep collecting and saving up money to go shopping to increase your life and carefully select powered-up weapons to take down enemies you couldn't defeat before. The further you get, the stronger you can feel yourself becoming, and it feels good.
Wow.
The characters appearing in between stages are the game's other charm point. You'll meet your co-worker, who is a cat for some reason, your president, also a cat, and an office lady of indeterminate species. They work like us, slog through overtime like us, complain, get chewed out, and even comfort each other, just like us. Experience the unique and intricately detailed world of Karo Blaster.
Wow. That description went in places I wasn't ready for it to go.
Yeah. Yeah, me neither. I mean, even after having played through the game, I mean, I guess it's not really wrong about any of that. I'm not sure that's how I would best describe the game. It's certainly a very interesting explanation for a frog-based action platformer. But hey, if they're comfortable with putting that description in the eShop, who am I to complain?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it's definitely a little silly.
I like it. I feel like it kind of sets the tone for the goofiness of the game.
That it does. That it definitely does. All right, that does it for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Pete at Burly Red Yeti. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Pete Michaud,
Caro Caro,
and our good frenemy, the Octoling, we will see you next time.